Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, John, for that introduction. I've been working in the art business for 17 years now. I started my career at Sotheby's. I spent 10 years working in the legal department at Sotheby's. And when I first started working on fish and wildlife issues in the art market, I had a trade background before I went to Sotheby's, but when I started working in the art market, the application of the endangered species rules to antiques didn't make much sense to me. My attitude was, I understand it's a law, but it didn't make a lot of sense why very old objects, things 2, 3, sometimes thousands of years old, should be regulated the same way as other objects. Over the years, I've come to understand that actually it is very important that antiques are regulated. And the reason for that is, I'll explain in a moment, antiques have a big impact on how people view objects generally. So I'll show you some examples in a moment. It's very difficult to say that antiques should have some special privilege as far as documents or as far as process is concerned that shouldn't apply, that apply to other objects. Antiques do get some special protection, and we're going to see that. But the documentation requirements are complicated. We're going to go through some of them. I will give you today just a very broad outline of the law and regulation. The rest of the panel is going to fill in the procedure, the documents, and how you get things done. So with that, let me start with a couple of examples. Some of you might recognize this. This is a Baroque ivory sculpture, a really beautiful sculpture that a client of mine had on loan at the Frick Collection. It's no longer there. It was not purchased, and it was exported to Europe. This object is made of African elephant ivory. It can no longer come back into the United States under the new rules. That object is not the problem. This is what the problem is with ivory. And what I was just saying a moment ago, these are tourist trade materials. These are not things you would see in your museums, right? They are copies of Chinese and African antique objects. They're really poor and crude copies. So most of you look at this and say, you know, this is clearly not antique, this is clearly not artwork. But this is the problem. And when I was at Sotheby's, I didn't see this because no one goes to sell one of these. At Sotheby's, no one goes to donate one of these to your museums. But this is the problem. This is where newly poached ivory ends up in these types of objects. And they're out there. You don't see them because no one brings them to a museum. They proliferate the market. Still, I still see these types of objects being sold today, even after the new rules. So this is the problem, and it's something we really have to take seriously. These objects are influenced by antiques and styles of artwork that you see in your museums. And that's the connection between what you do and the problem in the market. So we have to be cognizant of that. Okay. So what I've been asked to do is to give you an overview of the laws and regulations that affect the trade in endangered species. These are not the only laws, but these are the ones I'm going to speak about today. The first and most important is the Endangered Species Act of 1973. It has been in effect since 1973. So many of the requirements you see in the director's order and in the proposed rule that we're going to talk about are not new. They've been around since 1973. The director's order, as John mentioned, came out last February. It has an appendix, so if you're looking for it, there's the director's order 210, there's an appendix to it, and there are two amendments. So those together I'm calling the director's order, or DO 210. Recently there was a proposed rule that came out to revise section 4D, or the 4D rule for African elephant ivory, which is found in 50 CFR 17, which is soon to become a final rule. So some of you have commented on this proposed rule. It will become a final rule in time to come. This presentation assumes what is in the proposed rule will be in the final rule. That's the only way I could do this because it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Others might comment on what the rules are right now before the rule goes into place, but it didn't make sense to me to give you an outline of something that's going to change very quickly. Where possible, and in the questions and answers, we can talk about if you have something right now, how would it differ from what's up here? Happy to do that. I'm sure some other people on the panel are going to do that also. CITES, the Convention on the International Trade of Endangered Species, is the easiest part of what we're going to talk about today. And last, the Marine Mammal Protection Act. We'll talk a little bit about that. Okay, so for your purposes, and I most of the speaking I do on this is about commercial trade. And I'm very happy to be here to talk about non-commercial trade because I do work with museums on these issues, and I work with, also with collectors who donate to museums. There is a difference between commercial trade and non-commercial trade. So when I mean commercial trade, that's held in the course of commercial activity since ESA went into effect or since the animal was listed on the ESA. Non-commercial means it has not been held in the course of commercial activity since then. Now, for your purposes, the proposed rule, and some of you, I'm sure you've read this, the proposed rule makes clear that donation to a museum, even if there's a tax advantage to the donor, is not a commercial transaction. And that was clarified in the proposed rule. The proposed rule only deals with African elephant ivory. However, I've been told that this rule applies to really everything. So you can rest assured that a donation to a museum, even if it's not African elephant ivory, will be treated as non-commercial. Okay, so one requirement that is tricky is that the importer or exporter, or if you're trading in interstate commerce within the United States, is required to identify the species of the material you're dealing with. And I know this is very difficult for some people. The standard of proof for how you determine what the species is best available evidence. What that means, we're going to find out, because it hasn't been defined in the proposed rule. Maybe it shows up in the final rule, but that is the standard that we're going to have to apply. Now, that is the standard the importer-exporter has to apply. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has the burden of disproving your species identification. Practically speaking, and other people on the panel might have a different view on this, if you're using the best available evidence that you have, and it's reasonable, and you're being careful with the evidence you're using, I think it's going to be very difficult for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to disprove that. However, you have to use best available evidence. So you cannot leave out information, you have to tell the whole story, and you have to be accurate with what you do. So before we get to ivory, which is the thing everyone's talking about, I want to remind you that there are other things out there other than ivory that are regulated. And I want to start with bird feathers really quick, because they're easy. There is no commercial trade in eagle feathers. There is no commercial or non-commercial trade. There is no trade in eagle feathers. There is no commercial and non-commercial trade in migratory birds that are listed on the Migratory Bird Act list. There's no commercial and non-commercial trade in wild birds under the Wild Bird Conservation Act. All other bird parts and feathers might be regulated under the ESA or CITES, and you have to follow the rules for those. Sorry. Specific information about the laws and regulations are available at that link. Okay, so let's talk about ivory. So as I said, there's a difference in the director's order and the proposed rule between non-commercial trade and commercial trade. So I'm going to break it up that way. And first, I'm going to start with African elephant ivory, because again, there's a difference between African elephant ivory and Asian elephant ivory. As far as the law is concerned, practically speaking, the rest of the people on the panel are going to talk to you about how that really works in real life. So, for non-commercial import of worked African elephant ivory, we're only talking about worked African elephant ivory. If it's raw, forget about it. Don't do anything with it. Don't touch raw ivory. If it's worked African elephant ivory, let's talk about that. The other caveat I want to say is if you're a scientific museum or you do scientific testing or other things, there are other exemptions that I'm not mentioning. This is for the average art museum. So if you're importing non-commercial African elephant ivory. The first line is, under the ESA, it either has to be pre-act or antique. And we're going to talk about what that means. And then, under the director's order and the final rule, It has to be legally acquired and removed from the wild prior to February 1976 and is either part of a musical instrument or part of a traveling exhibition. You'll notice that those are two requirements, and you have to meet both. The first line is the Endangered Species Act. The Endangered Species Act has been around since 1973. It hasn't gone away. The director's order and the final rule are in addition to that. So both the rule and the act apply. So practically speaking, in a minute, we're going to see what that means. Okay, so for non-commercial export of African elephant ivory, again, under the ESA you have some requirements, and then under the final rule, not the director's order, because the director's order does not address export of African elephant ivory. It addresses the requirement of it being antique under the ESA, but it doesn't direct it directly. So it's or, it's not and. So it's under the ESA you have requirements, and then or, under the final rule, you have different requirements. And then last, for trade within the United States, what we call interstate trade, movement with, for non-commercial purposes is not restricted. All right, so let's start off. Now I'm going to go through each one of those separately. So for import, as I said, under the ESA, it's either pre-act or antique. Then under the director's rule and the final director's order and the final rule, legally acquired before 76 and is either part of a musical instrument or part of a traveling exhibition. By definition, those are only loans. Donations don't fall under those exemptions because it's an and. Technically, then, if it's pre-act, it's possible that it could be a donation. But pre-act requires an ESA permit, and I don't know if you can get one of those. So practically speaking, we're talking about antiques that are coming in on loan. Second, export. Again, you have to meet your ESA requirements. Then under the final rule, and it's or now, it's not and, either you meet the ESA requirements or under the final rule, pre-76 African elephant ivory, again, part of a musical instrument, or part of a traveling exhibition. Those are your loans. That's African elephant ivory. Those are the broad rules and laws that apply. The specifics we're going to get into with the rest of the panel. Let's shift to Asian elephant ivory. As I said, Director's Order 210 does not address Asian elephant ivory. So, non-commercial import, it's either pre-act or it's an antique. Same thing for export. It's either pre-act or an antique. Last, same rule for Asian. Non-commercial interstate trade is allowed. Now, let's go back 1 second. You'll also notice up top, I put, and all other ESA-listed species, because the rules that I'm talking about apply to Asian elephant ivory, actually apply to all ESA-listed species. So these rules apply to everything else. So that is your tortoise shell and all of your other stuff that you can think about. That's all going to be covered by these rules. And again, I'm talking non-commercial still. Okay. So let's look at those separately. So pre-act, again, you would need an ESA permit for that. I don't know if they're giving them out. Or it's antique. Antique, what does that mean? Well, practically speaking, again, and I'm going to sort of get into the practicality. I said I'm going to leave that for other people, but I just wanted to mention, because I keep on mentioning ESA antique, what is an antique? Practically speaking, for import, which is going to be different for export, for import, this is what it means. You need an outside expert to give you a report or affidavit saying it's antique. So a third-party report. What is antique? It's over 100 years old and not restored since the Endangered Species Act went into place. Then you need an outside expert's determination of species. You call Anibal Rodriguez. He'll tell you what to do. That's what he does. Second, you need a CITES. The foreign country has to issue a CITES. And it has to be imported through an antique port. Those are your requirements for import of Asian and any other endangered species that are not African elephant ivory. Okay, here is export then. Again, Asian elephant ivory or any other endangered species, if you're exporting, again, if it's pre-act, need an ASA permit, or it's antique, same requirements. Different requirements. So you still need the antique approval from a third party. You also need to prove that the material has been in the United States since 9/22/1982. That's the date the antique ports were set up. So before that date, if it was in the country or made in the U.S., you're fine. But if it was imported after that date, then you need some proof of that. So if you read the director's order and the definition of what an ESA antique is, it says that you need proof of this. What is the proof? Well, I've given you some examples that are listed in there and some I work with. How do you support it? A purchase receipt, a dated photograph, an inventory record, insurance records, appraisals, anything you can come up with. Then you need the antique approval. So third-party antique approval. Again, 100 years old, not repaired since 73. And you need a CITES issued by the Fish and Wildlife Service. That's export. That is non-commercial trade. Now, let's move to commercial trade. These are your acquisitions. So incoming, outgoing. Incoming, there are none. So for African elephant ivory, there is no commercial activity, full stop. No exception. No commercial activity in African elephant ivory. That's in the director's order. You can export for commercial purposes African elephant ivory if it's an ESA antique. And you can trade in interstate commerce within the United States, antiques, and something new that came in the proposed rule, de minimis amounts. So small amounts of ivory can be traded in interstate commerce. So let's go through each one of these in a little more detail. Okay, so there's no import for commercial purposes, so that's gone. What about export? Well, it has to be antique. What does antique mean? It means the same thing we just saw on the other slide. You need an affidavit stating it's been in the United States prior to 9/22/1982. You need documentation to support that. You need an outside expert's affidavit that's antique. And then you need an outside expert's determination of species. And when I keep on mentioning the antique part is someone with expertise in the object, that can date the object using art historical references. The expert's determination on species, that is probably a different expert. That is a scientist. That's somebody like Annabelle who understands materials and has a scientific background. Could they be the same person? I don't know. I've never seen someone who can do both. Again, those are the requirements. How about interstate trade? How does that work? So again, these are accessions and deaccessions, commercial purchases, so buying, deaccession, and sale. Interstate trade, you have antique or de minimis. So for export, it had to be antique. Here, it could be non-antique if it's de minimis amounts of ivory on the object. Okay, so how does that work? What do you need for that? Practically speaking, again, you need proof that it's been in the United States since 9/22/82 or legally imported thereafter. So when I keep on mentioning that date in 82, it's either in prior to that date, made in the U.S., or legally imported after. If it's legally imported after that date, you need the CITES. That's the only way you can prove legal importations, by having the CITES. Documentation supporting that. Third, it's either an outside expert saying that it's antique, over 100 years old and not repaired, or it's de minimis amounts, which is ivory compresses less than 200 grams plus some other requirements that I'm not going to get into. I'll let the rest of the panel get into that, those specifics. So you have two options for trading in interstate commerce that you don't have for export. So this is an addition that came out in the proposed rule. And then last, you always need to identify species. So even in interstate commerce, even though you're not exporting, you're not getting a CITES permit, because for interstate commerce, you do not need a permit. These rules still apply. You have to get species identification for anything you buy or sell in interstate commerce. And that's the easy part for interstate commerce. The harder part for commercial trade is that if you're in a state where the state regulates the trade in endangered species, it's far more complicated. Far more complicated. And I'm not going to get into it because there are many states we'd have to cover. There's new legislation in Washington State. There's legislation in New York. There's legislation in New Jersey. There's legislation popping up in many different states. So wherever you are, and wherever the other party is, remember that we're talking commercial, so there's a buyer and a seller here, you have to follow the rules in those states. So you have to follow the federal rules and the state rules. Okay. Now let's talk about commercial trade in Asian elephant ivory. As I said, the director's order only puts a moratorium on the import of African elephant ivory. Asian elephant ivory can be imported. How you tell the difference and whether you can practically tell the difference, that's up to Anubhav to tell you. I'm just telling you what the law says. You can export Asian elephant ivory. You can also trade in interstate commerce. And when I say Asian elephant ivory, that means all under endangered species follow the same rules. So let's go through those. Now they should be a little more familiar because they're similar. So for import, has to be antique. You need someone to attest to that. You need to determine species by an outside expert. You need a CITES. Those are the requirements. How do you export? Same as we saw before. Continuous possession before 82 or imported with CITES after. Documentation supporting that. Outside expert saying it's antique, over 100 years not repaired. And species identification and your CITES from Fish and Wildlife. That's how you export Asian elephant ivory or anything else other than African. And last, interstate commercial trade. Same thing. Continuous possession since 82 or legal import after. Proof of that. Species determination by an outside expert. Antique certification by an outside expert. And you have to follow state rules also. Complicated enough? Okay. It's going to get easier. We really have a great panel here who's going to explain more of how you flush out. Practically speaking, what do you do to follow these rules? Now, as I said, the law says this is how it is. Practically speaking, we're going to find out, can you really do these things? Even though the moratorium is on African elephant ivory only, how do you do with Asian elephant ivory? We're going to talk about that in a minute. Last but not least, not to leave this out, the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Because people use the term ivory to refer to many things more than just elephant ivory. I usually don't. When I talk about ivory, it's elephant ivory. But people use the word ivory to talk about other types of tooth and bone. The Marine Mammal Protection Act is another law that you have to layer on all this. So if you're talking about any of these species, you have the Endangered Species Act that we've gone over. We've gone over those requirements. You have to layer on the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Practically speaking, what it says is no import, export, or interstate trade in anything taken after December 21, 1972. And second, you can import, export, or trade in these materials if you're compliant with ESA and CITES, but you have to have a permit from NOAA for everything but walrus. And the last thing I want to mention is, because this comes up, some of you might deal with Alaskan or Alaskan native material. There are special exemptions under the Endangered Species Act and under the Marine Mammal Protection Act for Alaskan native material. I didn't put that before because I didn't want to make it confusing. But if you're dealing with Alaskan Native material, there are exemptions that I didn't mention which might help you. Thank you for listening.